Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Amen. New week. So you lit the candles, new week. The door is shut from last week. All the nonsense from today.
Can I give an example of nonsense?
Yeah.
Is Gabe here? Is it possible just to turn that down just a little bit? When Jason's talking about an old thing trying to come back, as random, there was a lot of random things. But as random as this is, we get a text from, I told the elders this morning, or this afternoon, I was like, I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth tonight. I am super fired up, so we may not want to record. So Zoe, you may not have a podcast this weekend. But we got a text from an old ministry asking if we could do a worship service with them. And it was just so interesting because part of the text was, we would really love to come and join you. And it was like, dot, dot, dot. All we require is 99. Not really, but kind of. It was like, all we need is lodging, food, honorarium. And so then I just started getting kind of feisty. I'm like, oh my gosh, we should totally do it and call it like a graduation celebration. And then we could do like a unify of Flagstaff. And then we could call all the pastors. And
oh my gosh.
Anyway, so I was just getting all fired up, and the reason why I think I was getting fired, and I don't mean this, like, it's interesting his timing. I'm in the middle of studying the culmination of why we left, and while I am on, and they were blessed, we get a text like, hey, would you mind coming back?
Yep.
It's just interesting. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting. So that's what he means by the door is shut for the craziness, and we're moving into a new thing.
Amen.
Yeah, so with that, I think it's good to, it's always good to just kind of, as Megan did, go back and remember certain things as we're moving forward to help us as a community and as individuals. And there may be some people that need to hear this, or maybe some people don't, but I think it's good to reaffirm kind of principles or things that we believe to help us move forward, especially in light of the system we left being super loud and trying to essentially drag us right back in to where we've really persisted to walk our way out of for this entire season, which has been intense. I don't think anybody would doubt that. But I just wanted to talk about the concept of trust. I had an interesting conversation with somebody last week who was saying, how can I trust that what's being taught here is the truth? And when I hear, which is a valid question, but I want to make a distinction, because when I hear that, most of the time, what is, and I'm not saying that this person was actually coming from this place, but what I hear most of the time is, how do I know the path that you're going down isn't going to disrupt where I was previously standing? How do I know that what you're leading me into isn't going to disrupt the comfort of the foundation that I've been standing on?
Right?
Right? Which ultimately means you're elevating your past experience over where Yahweh may be trying to take you.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you just follow whatever, but there's a different way to go about it, to where, if you guys remember what we talked about last week about what worship is and what actually gets you to overcome fear, it's presence based.
Yeah.
So instead of saying, can I trust what's being taught here? We have to learn to be aware of where Yahweh's presence is, and that's what we trust.
Yeah.
Not what it looks like or what it's going to end up doing to me, or taking away from me, or robbing me of, but being driven by the sense of, is his presence here? Do I have an awareness to recognize that? Is it being carried in this place? And then ultimately, trust is irrelevant.
Right.
Trust is not a, a question in your mind, because wherever his presence is, you will find yourself in the place that you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. Right? And so there's this huge aspect in, as people in general, of confirmation bias, that we have to fit. We already have a preconceived notion of what it is things are supposed to look like, right? This goes back to the golden calf. It's kind of the same thing as confirmation bias. This is what I expect it to look like. So everything that you're going to teach me, I can trust it if it fits into what things are supposed to look like. Whereas I was explaining, and I have explained many times, that this whole path that we've been on as a family has been not driven by confirmation bias. It hasn't been driven, well, can I trust where Yahweh's going to take us if it's going to disrupt my past experience of comfort of what it means to be a follower of Yeshua or whatever, right? The way that we've operated that has led us to this place had no preconceived notions. 10 years ago, I would have no idea this is what things would look like. I had no concept of being in the Torah, no idea. Living a Hebraic lifestyle. But when you pursue his presence and you follow his presence and you say things like, I don't know, and I put everything on the table, there's no confirmation bias driving where you're going. You're not fitting where you're going and ultimately making a golden calf that you can control, right? So I think it's important for us to remember, especially as we come off of this Torah portion, of what does worship look like? It reminds me of this scripture we've all heard in Ruth 1, 16 and 17 says, wherever you go, I'll go. Wherever you live, I'll live. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Somebody who has a mindset like that is not caring. They're not saying, well, where are you going? Is where you're going going to fit my comfort level? They're saying, where you go, I will go. And wherever you're going, that's where I'm going to end up, no matter what it looks like. Right? And so that's how we have to operate as a family. And that's how that's one way to articulate your faith and how you get to a certain place, even though you may not be able to make a chart of exactly the path we took and how we got here and articulate all the scriptures to back it up. If your mindset is wherever the presence of Yahweh is that I can discern, that's what I'm going to follow. And this is where it has led me, which is outside of what I could have ever imagined according to my own comfort. So I just think that's good to...
Really good.
Especially when the past is coming up and it's all loud and it's in your face and it's questioning what is it that you guys are doing that's outside of past experience according to somebody else. That's they're criticizing based out of a confirmation bias. Does that make sense? Out of a almost like a golden calf mindset. So I just wanted to bring that up because I think that's important for us to remember that is how we got here. And that also helps to alleviate when you start to have that come up and you're starting to question in your own mind, how do I trust where it is that we're going or what it is that we're being taught? I would self-evaluate, am I safe, because this might disrupt my whole understanding up to this point. Well, that it is, it's going to,
right?
Right? But if you switch your paradigm to wherever you go, wherever the presence is going, wherever the pillar of cloud by day is and the pillar of fire by night, wherever that is, that's where I'm going.
Yes.
And you have no clue what your destination is going to be.
Yep.
Amen?
It's a mindset shift when you think about following men.
Mm-hmm.
Because what he's talking about is, I'll decide if I can follow.
Yep.
Versus even not only Ruth, but then fast forward to Yeshua.
Mm-hmm.
Just drop your stuff and go. They didn't ask, but what does this mean for me?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when they did, he was like, then you don't need to follow.
Yep.
So the concept is covenant, then follow.
Yep.
Yes.
Which is what Megan was talking about. The beginning of Exodus is I am your covenant, meaning the decision is covenant, then follow.
Yep.
I never had the ability in engagement to be like, well, you're going to tell me where we're going to live in 5 years. And you're going to have to tell me what we're going to do. And you're going to tell me what this, you're going to have to, it was just, is it covenant or is it not? If it is, then wherever you go, I go.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't, it's not. So the concept of following is out of covenant, not out of your own, because then by the nature of that, it's isolation.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm already separated if it's you versus me, other than the concept of together.
Right?
Right?
Right.
So
right.
It's that paradigm of covenant.
Yeah.
And then moving.
And it's crazy because really what happens is instead of, because Yahweh has conditions, right? There are conditional things about scripture on his behalf that we have to abide by. And we're ending up flipping it saying, well, I'll do this if we end up putting conditions on him.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's wild. But I love to bring those type of things up because I want to, we say this all the time, equipping the family on how to walk, how to approach the word, how to walk in daily life, how to confront things, how to deal with things, how to overcome things. And I maybe we say it so much that it kind of just isn't a big deal, but I want us to recognize the tangible aspect of those things to actually begin walking those things out daily. Like begin thinking that way when you're reading the word. Because most of the time I think what happens is we say it so much and it's almost like neglecting to realize or take it for what it really is, which is almost like a standard operating procedure. If you have a policy at work and there's a protocol on how to go about accomplishing certain things, you don't kind of just blow that off as, well, that's nice. You know, that was nice, right? They're there so you can actually begin to do things or accomplish things that way, right? And this is one of those things, just like last week, how many of us really thought throughout the week, okay, what kind of fear is coming up? What is being made known to me? How are we dealing with that? Is it pushing me back into a place or is it keeping me from where I'm supposed to go, right? Like, are we really thinking those things through and walking that way? Like really seeing life through that lens.
Yeah.
Right? Are we doing, are we, are we doing that? Okay.
Yep.
So I'm going to get into the priestly garments as a continuation from last week's Torah portion before.
If we go in order, do we want to do the rest of the Torah portion? Because the priestly garments is next week.
Did you have that section?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
What he's talking about is I felt stirred that tonight, as Sally read, which thank you this morning, that we are finishing up tonight in Torah portion 73, which is the end of 38. So he went over 38. He's been going over basically the construction or the building of, which has been focused around covenant worship, and then we're going to be getting into the priestly garments. But before we get into the priestly garments, we've got the rest of Exodus 38, which is talking about the inventory of what came in.
Yeah.
So all tonight is the inventory of what came in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
After I read that, I felt stirred because, as you guys know, next week is not, we are not meeting next week.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is still, there's so much, I don't know if I'm going to be eloquent tonight because I feel like my mind is like blowing up. And so I'm not sure what's going to happen because there are so many things that are aligning.
Yes.
Even the planets. Right now. Like, I'm serious. Like, my mind is, like, freaking out. We have officially, we just started a new Shabbat, but we just started Adar, which there's a whole word I have for that. We just shifted into the year anniversary of, there's just so much stuff. And then I found out this morning that the planets are aligning. And I'm like this all day long.
Like, I don't even know if I want to just, like, shut this and just be like, I have another whole word for tonight. But what I do know is that Yahweh has more intention than just reckoning and inventory.
Yes.
There's a word with that, but we're also going to get into the priestly garments. And I really felt stirred. I want to tackle Exodus 40. So basically, we are trying to do next week and this week all tonight, because I did not want to miss corporately being able to culminate Exodus together when he had us cancel next week, which I also find very significant that we're canceling as a first fruit.
Yep.
This is what I don't know where to, I'm just going to insert this. Okay. We find out in Exodus 40 that exactly 1 year of leaving Egypt, the tabernacle was built. Mm-hmm. Next week, we are celebrating. I'm not kidding. If you guys don't understand the date that was picked, it was not a convenient spring break date. The date of 8 Adar is the date that Anya said yes to a process.
Yep.
Exactly 1 year, we are celebrating the dwelling of his presence, that a tabernacle has been built that took a year of a process to be able to walk into. And we as a family are not going to be meeting in the word, but we're going to be meeting in covenant of a first fruit of you can't make this up. It's not like when I saw Anya's face and then it took him a couple weeks to agree. And then I go and I get her that I was like, this is the 1 year anniversary in a year. I didn't even know she was going to say yes, let alone a wedding date. And so it's just, there's so much that's going on that I wanted to make sure that we were in alignment to walk into this next year.
Yeah.
Because it is absolutely powerful that not only are we in the Torah portion where it's a year later, we're actually in Adar, which is the last month prior. This is the last month of slavery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's like we're in the anniversary of the last month of slavery, but we're also in the process of a year later. What happens when you honor the last month of slavery and actually leave? Because in a year, his presence dwells.
Yep.
Based on the work that you do to build a dwelling place for him to dwell with them and move with them.
Yes.
That's right now.
Yes. Yeah.
Like that's just crazy. I mean, just the Torah portion lining up of it being a year, and we're actually entering into Adar, which is the last. Meaning next week when we talk about it says in Exodus 40 on the or 39 whatever it, on the first day of the first month, that is in 1 month. So we're in alignment of being able to honor that last month before you move into that. It's like we're right in alignment. And then Yahweh was like, and then all the planets are going to align on the same night that you move into Adar. So we decided we're going to just do first fruits tonight. And we're going to seal this with communion because of all that we're stepping into. So I'm actually going to give a word about the month. And then I'm going to go into the inventory, I think. And then we'll have you do the priestly garments. And then I'll get into... Does that sound fine? Does that sound okay? Okay. I am not able... I don't know when to release. I cannot move past the line. I don't know. Okay. Let me start with this, because it's right there. It's on me, and I can't get. I don't know what's happening. But what I want us to do is I want our mind. I know that we've been working on this, but I want to just kind of come in with a sledgehammer. And I want to, and I feel like I have to like walk it out. So I want us to, especially with the old saying, come back. I want us to kind of understand something. We recognize that the old and the new is kind of not a good concept, right? Like we understand that. What I want to do is take a sledgehammer to that whole thing, okay? So while we're saying that that's not the best way to say it, another way to look at it is you have the, I don't know how to do this. You have the old. Okay, so I'm in Genesis. Wait, I'm going to be backwards to you guys. Well, I'm Hebraic. You guys can figure this out. I'm in Genesis, and I'm walking through the Old Testament. Okay? Then Yeshua comes, and then there's the New Testament. And the old and new section, like the section point of the old and the new is Yeshua. Okay. What I want us to just grab a hold of is what if there's no line. So it's not even old and renewed, mm-hmm. because that already sets you up that yeah. something's different.
Yeah.
So just this line is no longer there.
Right.
Yeshua came, but he did not come to bring a line.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the demarcation
right. yes.
of a new thing. I'm going to explain. Because it's all about covenant. Right? I'm trying to think of how to say this without Black being like crazy. He is this Yeshua came right here. Okay? Yeshua is not the new covenant. He's the door to establish the covenant he always wanted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he didn't. Good. He's not a new ring.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to give you. He's the access to let you put the ring back on
mm-hmm.
because you divorced him.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he gave you, because without the ability to get remarried, you cannot have death. You have to have death. You cannot move forward without a dead body, yeah. essentially. So the only thing that came was death and life in order to put the ring back on, but he's not the ring.
Mm-hmm.
He's the means to the ring.
Yeah.
Okay? So therefore, there's no line. It's not an old thing, and then he came to do a new thing. He was just coming to restore you to an old thing by giving you access to that thing so you could go over here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So if there's no line, then technically old.
Get it.
Old.
Yeah.
So that when he comes back,
yeah.
you are now renewed. There's no line. So when we're talking about the tabernacle, when we say it's a shadow of the things to come, I don't believe it was a shadow of the thing to come.
Yeah.
It's a shadow of yeah. the things to come.
Yes.
And
yeah.
we're still walking in a heavenly reality, and you're the temple.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So how can we do away with the temple?
Yeah.
You're saying, by this line, if you believe that, then you're saying that the co-partner to him, which is the whole purpose of him dwelling with us,
yep.
is null and void.
Yep.
It's done away with. It's
yeah.
old.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in something new without you. So it's confusing.
Yeah.
Because your spirit and you have access, he tore the veil, but you're still flesh.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not done yet. So we're in transition.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
yeah.
Not just transition in an era of waking up. I'm
yep.
talking about
yep.
it. We are still
yep.
in a transition
yeah.
from here until here.
Yeah. yeah.
And we're missing
yeah.
If the whole purpose of building something is so that he can dwell, then if we say there's no purpose to build, why is he not dwelling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the renewed covenant, that it's almost like this, the way that I'm seeing it is that the renewed covenant, if you read in Jeremiah, if you read in Isaiah, we're going to get into it, you read in Hebrews, it talks about a renewed covenant. Let me. Are you guys tracking what I'm trying to
yeah,
get
yeah,
down?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna read this. Hebrews.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm like, I don't even know if we're going to get into the Torah portion. Okay. Now, I'm going to read the Renewed Covenant. This is coming out of Jeremiah and Isaiah. This is basically the foundation, Hebrews 8. This is the Renewed Covenant. Now, I'm going to just preface this. There's nothing in this scripture that says anything about your, this doesn't have anything to do with your personal place in heaven. There's nothing about the covenant. There's nothing about his covenant that says anything about so when you die, you can have heaven. There's nothing about the covenant that has anything to do with a reality that's like off over there that someday we'll figure it out. Yeah. That's not the context. Okay, so let me read this. Behold, days are coming, says Adonai, when I inaugurate a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. It will not be like the covenant I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the hand of Egypt, for they did not remain in my covenant, and I did not care for them, says Adonai. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says Adonai. I will put my Torah into their mind, and upon their hearts I will write it. And I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And no more will they teach each one his fellow citizen and each one his brother, saying, know Adonai, because all will know me, from the least of them to the greatest, for I was merciful toward their iniquities and their sins. I will remember no more. Listen to this. In saying new, he has treated the first as old. But what is being made old and aging is vanishing.
Yeah.
Christians read that and say, see,
yep.
What it means by new, thinking that this is when that happens.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
How can that be? Because I'm still teaching you.
Yeah.
How can that be the house of Judah and the house of Israel is not together? How can that be if the Torah is not written on every person's heart?
Yeah.
We're not there yet, so oops, you're still in the old.
Right. Yeah.
There's no line.
Yeah. Yeah.
So technically, it's all the old covenant. John was seeing, and I would assume even Christian theology agrees that Revelation has not happened.
Yes.
That's what I mean by the story's not done. So it doesn't make any sense to say we're going to do away with all this, because then that means we're saying that we're going to do away with all false that you are in order for him to dwell again.
Yep.
Right.
So if you don't understand how to build the tabernacle for him to dwell, and you're in the tabernacle, you're going to miss out on how to get him to come back.
Yep.
So that the renewed covenant can actually take place.
Yep. That's good.
Now, I will say this. The only line is that Yeshua is the door, so you could be the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not done away with.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by he's not the covenant. He's the access for you to be able to be empowered, to be able to build and build his dwelling place for him to come again, so the renewed covenant can actually play out. Because I guess what I'm saying is if it says, I've made a new covenant, why do we think that happened in Matthew? Or it couldn't have happened in Matthew, he wasn't dead yet. So then at what point in Acts did the renewed covenant happen?
Yeah.
Now, in Acts, we do receive the renewed covenant through the Holy Spirit, which is symbolic of Mount Sinai. Mm-hmm. Did it end at Mount Sinai?
No.
It just meant they knew how to do it.
Yes.
All Acts was by the Holy Spirit was empowered you to know how to do it.
Yes.
So that all from that point now is building his dwelling place so he can come and be glorified on the earth.
Yep.
Okay, so
So I just kind of want to take a sledgehammer to the whole old and the new to kind of think about when you're reading some of these scriptures in Hebrews that talks about how the tabernacle is a shadow of what?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is what I'm getting at. And a lot of people think it's a shadow for a better thing.
Yeah.
In heaven. It doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. I mean,
It's good.
Okay. The tabernacle is a shadow of a heavenly reality. That is true. We read in Hebrews that Yeshua entered the temple in a heavenly place. So the cool thing that I'm trying to get at is that the tabernacle is a divine reality on earth from a heavenly template. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you're the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're still a divine blueprint of a heavenly reality on earth.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I don't know what I was saying before that. It doesn't make sense to say that's been done away with for a confusing, arbitrary concept that there is still a heavenly reality with nothing we can do until he just comes back is all I'm getting at. That the heavenly reality and the template on earth is still in play because that didn't go away. Yeshua did not come to just obliterate your power and to just do away with all of you. It's why he came. It's almost like another way to represent what I've been saying. The story's not finished yet. So like when it says in Matthew, not one jot, not one tittle is going to go away until? We know that until has not happened. So I'm just trying to connect that when the tabernacle, when it talks about the tabernacle being a shadow, that we recognize that we're still in a shadow. There is a heavenly reality, but we all know this is not the fullness because our spirit is aware that the veil is torn. Let me just be real. Veil's torn, cool encounter. Yes?
Yeah.
You're still a flesh.
Yep.
There's still separation.
Yep. Yeah.
This is not the fullness of his dwelling.
Yes.
So if there's a fullness, then that means that we're still in transition or we're still in an old thing.
Yeah.
So even if this is the old thing, we're still an old thing.
Yeah.
So this was the old thing, if anything. And now we're just in an old thing.
Yeah.
And the remnant understands the new thing.
Yes.
The problem is we dismiss the old thing.
Right.
Which is what brings forth the new thing.
Right.
By being entitled and saying, I'm already in a new thing.
Yep.
No, you're not. You're still flesh.
Yep. Yeah.
There's still separation. Yep. If I have skin, there's still separation.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that you have to wait for it because the door gives us access.
Yeah.
But there's purpose in that access in order to be filled with the Holy Spirit, to have the instructions to know how to build so that he'll dwell.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no line.
Yeah, that's good.
And if there is a line, it's old. We're currently in an old thing.
Yeah.
But we all want to be in an old thing because we know that the hope of glory is that a new thing is coming and it's not going to feel like this, where there is no tear, there is no separation, there is no death.
Yeah.
So it's okay
yeah.
to not be in this fight of, but we're in a new thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
That's if that's your new thing,
right.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Because I'm okay to claim I want this to be an old thing.
Yeah.
So there's no line.
Yeah.
Amen.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why that's on me. That has nothing to do, I think, maybe with tonight.
But I really was stirred because we're getting into the end of building the tabernacle and the fulfillment of why. Here's my title. You'll understand this because I want us to see this multidimensionally. The title, he puts his trust in his people to build for him a place on earth to be with his people again.
Say that again.
He puts his trust in his people to build for him a place on earth so that he can be with his people again. He did it in Exodus, and he's doing it again.
Yeah.
He's putting his trust in his people to build for him a place on earth so that he can be with his people again.
Yeah.
The gospel doesn't change from Genesis. If his original intent was to walk in the cool of the day on earth, right, why would he change his mind and be like, you know what, maybe you should walk with me in the cool of the day in heaven?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He wants to walk in the cool of the day with his people on earth.
Yeah.
Right. So, in this Torah portion, we're at the culmination of building and constructing this thing, so that in chapter 40, glory fills the temple. This is a supernatural blueprint of being filled with his glory. And being filled with his glory is him dwelling amongst his people. So why would that be done with? The only difference, well, I'm gonna get into it, because after Exodus 40, we will never again after Exodus 40. These chapters are absolutely beautiful, what happened to the nation. Because after this moment, we will never see the nation again be obedient like they were in this portion. Until Yeshua comes and reminds people to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've done, 300 AD, is taken a religion and decided to stop his ministry that was actually coming to remind us to do the things that it takes for him, for his father, to be able to dwell with his people. So he sent his son to remind us of what to do.
Yeah.
We never see obedience again until Yeshua comes and reminds us to do it. And then here we are 2,000 years later, and we're actually using Yeshua as the covenant keeper to be able to say we don't have to keep covenant,
yeah,
and we don't have any role in the new thing. Now, I understand that I'm releasing definitely a very much theological concept, but I want us to understand that there's, when I read it, I'm very simple in my reading. I don't want a theology degree. I just want to read. When I read out of Jeremiah or Isaiah or in Hebrews and it talks about the renewed covenant, I'm not seeing that yet. So therefore, he did not establish that 2,000 years ago. He gave access to it. That is his heart. But this should be a good thing, because then there's hope that there's more. And it's not a death covenant, that the only time you can experience it is when you die, because it says in Exodus that they experienced it by building and assembling, not dying. He didn't take them through Exodus and be like, okay, now my glory is going to come when you all pass away. And you see my glory in the heavenly realm. That would be the gospel we've walked out. But that's not at all what's happening. How we're going to tie this together. No, let me start with the word of Adar, and then we'll go into inventory. Okay. So with all of that, we're transitioning into Adar tonight. It's the 12th month. Adar means strength and power, joy and increase, blessing and fruitfulness. The month of Adar is represented by a fish, which is interesting because going back to Hanukkah, the word over our year is to go deep. And so part of what this is the cleansing of the water. Fish being completely surrounded by the water is that we are, as sons and daughters, we are fully surrounded in his word. So we are protected from the enemy, and we are surrounded in his word. Okay. another thing is water always flows down. So part of this has to do with him wanting to reside in the lowest parts of our lives. So this month is a lot. There's victory in this month. It is the last month of slavery. It is the last month prior to the building of the tabernacle. This month there is a lot of joy with this month. Strength, power, joy, and increase. Okay? So with this month comes laughter. One of the ways to overcome evil is to build the immune system through laughter. We are in the the 3-year Torah portion, but also in the 1-year Torah portion. During this time, we always read about the priestly garments during this time. What's interesting about that is it reminds us that the priestly garments, and he's going to get into it, but remember what we learned about the priestly garments. Remember, he's the door. He's the high priest. He's your garment. Remember what I said about separation? I have skin. When I put on him, it puts me back in my original intent of pure light.
Yeah.
And it covers the sin. So this month, because it's the last month, is a time to start afresh. It's almost like you could look at it like a New Year's resolution, or another way that I'm going to talk about it tonight is taking inventory. It's your month to take inventory before moving into the new year. It's your month to be able to evaluate, to shift. It's the month of transformation. We're stepping into this tonight.
Amen.
The month of transformation. The word Adar, if I split it up from and Dar, is Aleph, which means God's oneness. Dar means to dwell. So to make himself a dwelling place on earth is literally the name of Adar. And we are shifting into Adar, and we are learning about his glory filling the tabernacle. See what I mean by alignment? There is an impartation that is happening for us to understand what it means for him to dwell in us, on us, among us. Okay? This is the month that we can tie all loose ends, turn all possibilities of frustration, depression into joy. It is a complete turnaround. It is where you transform from the lowest place to the highest, because it's where he wants to dwell in the lowest place. What that means is we're in the month right before the tabernacle comes, and it's, again, he has left a high place to come and dwell at the lowest place.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay. I'm just blown away. that it took the Israelites 1 year to build the tabernacle. 40 chapters. It's been 1 year. I'm trying to think of how much I want to go into that. So tonight, wanting to tackle chapters, basically the rest of 38, 39, and 40 to send us into next week, because I wanted us to understand that next week, as we celebrate as a family, I wanted to make sure that we address that next week when we celebrate, it is interesting. It like blew my mind when I looked up that next week's Torah portion is chapter 40. It's the priestly garments, and it's chapter 40, and it's the setting up of the tabernacle, of the home of being dwelt. So then thinking about that, Adar 8, 5, 7, 8, 4, which was the year of the door of covenant.
Yeah.
5, 7, 8, 4. 8 is covenant. 4 was the door.
Yes.
1 year, someone said yes to a crazy process. And it was an invitation to step through that door. And 1 year, something has been built.
Yeah. Yeah.
The original intent in covenant outside of this world.
Yes. Yeah.
The original intent in the beginning of covenant, where you go, I'll go, right?
Yes.
The original intent of covenant outside of this world, we get to witness his glory in and on a house built by his intention.
Yep.
So as a family, it's not just a Friday night service and reading a Torah portion. He is so reading us that we get to walk this as a family and witness chapter 40 in a covenant ceremony. Talk about him filling the temple exactly a year from leaving Egypt. And you guys, this is so powerful. This is a first fruit. This is our testimony. Anya, 1 year ago, chose to step out of slavery, step out of a world system that was bringing death, and stepping into an invitation that says yes. What happens when the bride calls out and says yes and decides to build for 1 year? We're going to witness something really powerful, but the entire ceremony is going to knock you on your face because it is not a regular ceremony at all.
Awesome.
So what happens when the bride calls out? The groom comes.
Yep.
It is a complete untwisting of what we've known.
Can I
release that part, or is that a surprise? I think it's okay because we're kingdom heirs. We have a lot of family that's coming. I mean, I have family being like, I've never been to a Jewish wedding. I'm like, that's great because I haven't either, and we're not going to be. This is not a Jewish thing. I don't understand what's going on. But one of the things that Yahweh showed us is that Anya is going to be coming down the aisle first. So the groom will not be up at the front. She will be coming down on her own first, as a representation of the bride responding to the invitation. Prophetically, she will turn and call, and then the groom will be coming out last. So there is a flip in escape theology. There's a flip in that responsibility of what we're building for Yahweh's presence to dwell. And so so I say that because there's a lot of things that are going to be happening that are not typical at all, because it's very personal, and we're basically just going to be watching an intimate time of them committing what they see in the spirit, essentially. And you guys, as that being a first fruit, you guys being able to stand as a witness will understand prophetically what's happening, because here's what's not going to happen. It is not a ceremony where we're like witnessing to people. Derek is officiating, but it's not like he's going to be like, okay, and now you are, and then you are, and then, oh, by the way, this is what's happening. You know how it is typically. That's not happening. It's very intimate. So by the Spirit, you guys will be able to send them into that for the rest of the family to be able to have any clue of what's going on. So anyways, but I say all of that because as a family, that's just, it's like the perfect, I don't need to preach on Friday night. We're living it. Isn't that so powerful? All right, so we are in the month of Adar. So this is the month to tie up any loose ends to be able to shift into the day season. So it's also the last month of the night season. This is where we're dreaming, right? So before we start doing some work to what he's shown us, this is kind of that last transition before we step into that. Okay? All right. So I'm just going to speak a little bit on inventory, and then we'll get into the priestly garments, and then we'll get into chapter 40. One of the things that I thought was so powerful in chapter 38 is, which is at the end, basically, this is where Moshe is reckoning. Or another way to say it is he's taking inventory. So just a couple things that I extracted from this portion that I thought was super amazing was we see Moshe as a leader keeping accurate account with others who were given the Spirit to do the work. So others were given the Spirit to do the work, but you have Moshe as a leader that was taking accurate inventory of everything that was going on. So going back to details matter. How many of us would be like, what does that matter? You know what? 100 talents came in. We could probably get away with just using 99 and pocket the one. Right? That is not what we see here. We see whatever came in is what was used.
And it's
meticulous. So we see integrity.
Yeah.
Okay. We also see I don't know if this necessarily stands out right away, but one of the things that I see is it's like a showing off of his miraculous work. Because this is kind of what it seems like to me is this is kind of the crux of the concept of everything I was just walking out. I believe the Antichrist and I believe that the enemy wants to completely and utterly destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
But we take that like he's gonna give me a flat tire. No, like he does not want you living.
Yeah, right.
He wants you hopeless. He wants you dead. He wants you not as a co-partner. He wants you having no authority.
Yes.
He wants you having no reason to live. He wants you to have no purpose. He wants you to be completely and utterly obliterated and not a part of any of this at all.
Yeah.
He wants you to be so demeaned, so deflated. Basically what I'm saying is he wants to castrate you, take all of your balls, twist them and throw them out the door.
Yeah.
He doesn't want you to have boys, girls, whatever. He wants to take everything from you that doesn't allow you to believe that you have the authority and the ability to walk with his glory inside of you where your shadow does heal.
Yes.
Where you do raise people from the dead.
Yes.
Where you do have the ability to be able to pull him and live. You are a co-heir and co-partner to the renewed covenant.
Yeah.
If you believe that the renewed covenant has already happened, this is kind of like what I'm getting at, then what's the point of you?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And what does he have a covenant with?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't build a renewed covenant so he could just fly into heaven and just sit there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this can't be it.
Yeah.
This cannot be the renewed covenant.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Getting texts from pastors saying, can I do a worship, sir? Cannot be the renewed covenant. Right? Like, does that make sense? Like, there's got to be so much more.
Yeah.
Not only so much more to walk out on earth, but so much more for when he comes.
Yeah.
And the enemy wants to come in and be like, and you don't have a part. Why? Because if he can keep your part out, he can't come.
Right.
So guess who gets to rule?
Yep.
That's good.
He is the ruler of this earth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Except for those who walk through the door, who know how to overcome him by being a co-laborer to be able to build for his, because there are some that know how to operate in the spirit, go beyond their flesh and recognize there is a day coming where we will be one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to operate from that place and I'm going to pull it here. So now the enemy has no hold.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that the enemy is still here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But there's only a remnant that can do that.
Yeah.
Because the enemy has taken everybody out to say you don't have the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know why I'm on this.
Really good.
But this is what so this is the crux. He needs your offerings.
Mm-hmm.
Every piece of it to build what he has.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
People and God. He needs partnership.
Yes.
He does not intend to accomplish his work without you.
Yeah.
That's basically what I'm getting at.
Yep.
Yeshua came not to draw a line to be like, I don't need you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He came to actually get rid of the line. To say, I'm here to empower you, because when I go, don't hold on to me.
Yes. Yep.
I'm sending you something that's going to empower you
so
that you'll actually be a partner to my father, because he hasn't had one. So I came here to show you what it's like to actually be a son, to partner with a father.
So
I'm going to leave. Don't hold on to me. I'm going to send you something that's going to empower you so you actually can be a co-partner with him so that the renewed covenant can actually play out.
Yep.
Which is what John saw. That hasn't happened yet, so you're still a partner.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
That was still
good. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does this make it, does this make it
yeah.
sense?
Yeah.
So then this little Torah portion about money. All it's saying is that I don't want to dwell without your building.
Yeah.
I don't want to, I cannot come without you doing the work.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
I need your 29 talents, and I need every penny of it. I need every talent of it. I need every shekel of it.
Yeah.
Not your Sunday. Not your 10%. Not your... I don't need part of you.
Yeah.
I need all that you have.
Yeah.
Because I want to give all that I have. Okay. Today's value of all this money that he takes inventory of is $20 million, right? The weight of all the precious metals was estimated around 19,000 pounds. So this is what I want to get at. First of all, there's an exact calculation, especially when it comes to the gold. So we see accuracy and we see integrity. Remember, where, you guys.
This is such a good word.
I don't know what is wrong with me. I feel like you guys are not understanding what's coming out of my mouth.
No, you're good. You're good.
You guys, where did all of this stuff come from?
Egypt.
Yes!
$1 million.
I just proved to you this is the old.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Post-Yeshua, still the old.
Yes.
So I'm still in slavery.
Yeah.
So I'm still in Egypt.
Yes.
Getting back wages for all the slavery that I've had. Because when the renewed covenant comes, he's going to need every piece of my old.
Yeah.
To build what's coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that's why I'm excited that I'm all right if I say, you know what, this kind of feels like slavery.
Yeah.
Even though it's post-Yeshua, it's not to fullness.
Yeah.
My spirit leaps. But my flesh is weak. So I love Paul. I do the things I don't want to do, and I don't do the things I do want to do. Did anything change post Paul?
No.
No! So if I still act like Paul, I'm in good hands.
Yeah.
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 That's
good.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Take a bow. So. The plunder that you get from your slavery is every shekel that you steal from slavery is going to be used to build his dwelling place.
That's good.
I'm trying to make this relevant that I don't want this line of demarcation to be like, well, that was an old thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got a good word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's right. Our Egypt is still right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's watch this. What you accumulated in slavery will build his dwelling place. All right, gold. He restates gold. Now, I think that this is interesting. He restates gold. What came in is what was used. What came in is what was used. I think he does that with the gold because remember what we talked about, gold is purity.
Yeah.
Gold is a representation of something that is pure. So, 2,000 pounds of gold comes in. What came in is what went out. Now, this is what I'm feeling. What is given in purity, every ounce of it is going to be used.
Mm, yeah.
The miraculous work is, I would think any contractor, anybody who builds anything, woodworking, whatever it is, anything that you're working with, if I was to give you a piece of wood, I'm assuming that whatever you build, you're going to have scraps on the floor.
Yeah.
Not here. He doesn't say, well, where's the gold? 29 talents and 730 shekels. And where's the, yes, the one that he repeats twice. He doesn't say that he uses 1770. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Every ounce that was given, every ounce of it was used. Nothing was lost. The word over your life is whatever is happening in your slavery. Mm-hmm. Anything given over in purity, yeah. None of it is going to be scraps.
That's good.
Yep. None of it is going to drop to the floor, yep. And he only uses part of it. Yep. He's going to use every ounce of what was given over in purity for him to build his dwelling place.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Amen.
That was good.
Because it goes into the silver, which talks more about the senses, which has to do with counting of a nation, and then it goes into the bronze. But the entirety, that's where it is, verse 24. The entirety of the gold that was used for the work of the sanctuary, including the gold at the offering, was 29 talents and 730 shekels, according to the sanctuary shekel. So the entirety of that, to me, is showing that the preciousness of what is used, given over in purity, all of it is going to be used. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Let me read one more thing. Yeah. Well, and I guess it happens with the silver too. But anyways, just verse 24, that the entirety of the gold. So the we're not going to have time to get into it, but what I wanted to just kind of dive into, there was one commentator that I was studying that I thought was super powerful, was talking about how the workers were filled with the Spirit. Mm-hmm. So remember what I just talked about, Acts. What happened post his death was not, there was a contract of a renewed covenant, but all that was for you to be empowered,
yeah.
To know how to build.
Yeah.
Because what happens after Mount Sinai? They know how to build. What happens after Ruach comes?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're filled with the Spirit to know how to build.
Yeah.
So one of the ways to look at this is the fruits of the Spirit. Being filled with the Spirit will... those are the shekels and the talents that you bring forward to be able to build something. So love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. The things that fill you with the Spirit, because one thing that we notice is that there's commandments that people have to bring stuff. Then it starts to shift where we see the people bring. It's always out of the overflow of the heart that wanted to bring it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it talks about the commandment of bringing, but if you see the people's response, it was always that the heart that was lifted for them to bring something. They were never commanded out of they never came out of like, well, you asked me to do this.
Right.
They came out of an overflow to give. In fact, Moses had to stop them because too much was coming in.
Yeah.
So think about that overflow, not necessarily in shekel and in talent, but being what fills you, what is the fruit of the Spirit filling you and bringing that forward in its fullness to abundance, to where you would have so much peace that someone would be like, okay, can you stop?
Yeah. Yep.
You'd have so much kindness that a leader would have to be like, okay, we've got enough.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that what the Renew Covenant says? That you'll not have to teach anymore. We won't need a teacher to be like, how to be kind, how to be filled with the Spirit, how to be. It will be a shifting where there's so much joy that someone's going to have to be like, all right, we've got enough.
Mm-hmm.
We can build this thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's good.
Doesn't that change our level of ownership? That even if just in this remnant, we were going to build something where he could come and dwell.
Yes.
Where his glory would be manifested so that the nations would see that he's residing here is going to come when I say, okay, that's enough joy. We don't need any more joy. Oh, and by the way, every piece of love is going to be used. Like there's going to be no scraps. There's going to be no leftover. There's an exact amount. Does that make any sense what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay. I think that's it for inventory.
Inventory.
Or the rest of 38. You got 39. I just got a couple things.
I'm still registering everything you just said.
Is it making sense?
Oh,
like for us to just get rid of the line?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's powerful that going into chapter 40, where essentially the tabernacle is being consecrated for operation. Right before that, like I said last week, you have covenant, worship, and priesthood being highlighted or allowing us to gain a deeper understanding. And I think it's powerful what she said about what the enemy's trying to do or rob us from,
yeah,
or keep us out of the equation.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, as we all know, Yahweh gave a word to this family to exit systems,
mm-hmm, yeah,
in general. We've,
yeah,
left a system of slavery.
Yeah.
We've exited systems, patterns of certain worldly systems, which when you come to the priesthood, I believe that defines scripturally what your role is as part of that system that we're stepping into. You have a function in the new system, and that function is priesthood.
Yeah.
And as a priest, you are one who functions to facilitate Yahweh's dwelling on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have the ability as a royal priesthood to operate in a manner, in a certain uniform with the government on our shoulders, to actually facilitate,
mm-hmm,
Yahweh's dwelling on earth for the nations to be able to see. But that's what the enemy's trying to keep us from.
Right.
So when you look at 1 Peter 2:9, we've all heard this. You're a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. And most scriptures, most versions, I want to read a couple, basically talk about that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of the darkness into the wonderful light. That's the reason you're a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, so that you can declare the praises of him who called you out. Or so you can show others the goodness of God because he called you out. Or that you can proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out. These are all just different versions.
Mm-hmm.
What it actually means is you're a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, to proclaim the virtues of him who called you out of darkness into wonderful light.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually means, when you talk about the word virtue, it's actually his morality,
mm-hmm,
his moral goodness, his law.
Yeah.
The reason you're called to be a priest,
yeah,
is to proclaim his law,
yep,
to others, because,
yeah,
that's what calls you out of darkness into the light.
Yep.
And we have to know that because Yahweh calls us that in the, not the old, but the old. We're called to be a chosen people, a holy nation, a royal priesthood, which is what we see the pattern of in this Torah portion when it talks about the priestly garments. Now, when you think about, and I encourage you guys to get into the details and what's underneath the details of all the elements of the priestly garments. But what I want to say to you is that these priestly garments, which were very rare materials, expensive, hard to find, hard to craft, these things were basically an outward appearance that reflected an inward process of what she talked about. Before you even get to the priestly garments, you have the character, the integrity, the process of righteousness and sanctification,
yeah,
of going through the tabernacle,
mm-hmm,
to even get to the place to be able to don these garments.
Yeah.
Okay? And in Isaiah 9:6, it talks about the government resting upon Yeshua's,
mm-hmm,
shoulders. And you see that pattern in this Torah portion with the tribes of Israel resting upon the shoulders of the priests.
Mm-hmm.
And what that represents is an element of governance that we are all called to carry as priests, but recognizing that that outward garment, that uniform, that basically designates us as an ambassador or a mediator, just like she said, Yeshua is not the covenant, he's the mediator,
right,
of the covenant.
Yeah.
Right? Hebrews 8 says, yes, Yeshua.
Yes.
It doesn't say Yeshua, a better covenant. It says Yeshua, mediator of a better covenant.
Yeah.
So as priests, these high priests, these Kohanim Gadol, were basically intervening on behalf of the house of Israel to Yahweh and on behalf of Yahweh to the house of Israel. They were a go-between that brought down and facilitated the dwelling of Yahweh on earth And that's what we have the authority to do. It's so crazy what she's talking about. And when we read these scriptures in the formerly new covenant, when we read 1 Peter 2:9, and it's like, the reason you're chosen, the reason you're a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's possession, is so that you can just sing his praises because he brought you out of the darkness. You're not, it is that, but it's not that. You're actually proclaiming his morality to others. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what is actually the function you have in a new system. You have to think of the tabernacle is a pattern of him coming from a high place to a low place. We've seen that pattern with Moshe coming from a high place to dwell with us in the lowest of low places and to bring his very dwelling and presence so that we could actually meet with him face to face. And that's what that new system is. That divine blueprint that we see on earth that he has the grace to involve us in is actually the new system. That is part of the new system. We're exiting systems so that we can enter his system. And part of his system and part of that divine blueprint is the priesthood, which is an outworking of all the integrity, all the character, all the righteousness, all the sanctification produces a byproduct of a priestly garment. There's covenant, right? She talked about working from the inside out. There's covenant, which is first. Then there's worship. Then there's priesthood, which is the outworking of worship. In the Hebrew, worship actually means work. Worship actually means service. So when you worship him, if we don't understand what it means to be a royal priesthood, if we're just thinking a royal priesthood means we're part of this new covenant that doesn't recognize the old covenant, then what is our royal priesthood for?
Right.
Because the purpose of our role in the new system is to proclaim his morality to everyone else as a mediator, as a go-between, to reaffirm and renew the covenant that was broken. Which means we're a mediator. Our role in the new system is as a mediator to proclaim his morality to those that disregarded his morality so they can embrace it, so they can have the fullness of Torah and get behind the veil and actually renew their covenant with him. Our royal priesthood is irrelevant and obsolete if we do away with the very purpose that we're supposed to proclaim
right.
as a priest.
Yeah.
So I encourage you guys to dig into what are those priestly garments, right? I'm not going to get into the details and the elements of the ephod, but it represents so many details, and it's amazing that we're going into this month of transformation and we're actually stepping into or transitioning or turning a corner into the tabernacle being consecrated for operation, which to me says we exited a system.
Yeah.
We've come all this way in a year to turn a corner and step into covenant. And we're actually stepping into a system, and we have to understand that we have a role in that system.
Yeah.
You're a piece of that system operating, which Moshe or Yahweh is getting ready to in this month, basically, consecrate and authorize and say, okay, now it's going to operate.
Mm-hmm.
You've broken something. I've spoken into you, given you the place to restore it. We've walked through this process of redemption, sanctification, righteousness. And now you have to understand who you are as a priest, which has been completely watered down just by looking at different translations. Everything's all about he's excellent. We praise him. It sounds weird, but it's almost like the enemy can get you to disregard your role in the new system by only focusing on him with this false humility that we don't have a role. And people will just look to him while they're disregarding his virtue and his morality because we're not proclaiming it.
Yeah.
We're not fulfilling our role as a priest. But this alignment of timing is crazy because it just confirms where we are as a family. Everything Megan talked about is an opportunity to tie up loose ends, like she said. Mm-hmm. The reason why we talk about these anyway type of things that we go back to is to be able to tie up loose ends, and there's a supernatural opportunity tonight in this very hour to make sure your loose ends are tied, everything's in alignment, you're stepping into the place, and you're actually operational as who you are as part of the new system that he's invited us into.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? We have to understand what it means to be a priest. Mm-hmm. And what, I mean, without going through this process of being restored, how what was our concept of what it means to be a king and a priest? And what are we proclaiming?
Yeah.
We're thinking proclaim praises to him who called you out of the darkness, and that's great, and we're thinking of that in terms of worship as a former concept of worship, not understanding what worship is. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's a major alignment and there's a major impartation to literally just step into alignment as part of the new system. Mm-hmm. Like we're not, don't miss, don't leave going into the next Torah portion. Don't miss the fact that you are called as part of the new system, an active part who has to proclaim his virtue.
Yeah.
Amen.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know how to like wrap my head around, but it's almost like read 1 Peter again, that we have to proclaim his virtue. The virtue part.
Yeah, it says that you may declare the virtue of him who called you out of the darkness into his wonderful light.
So if the new system is that you have to declare his virtue, then wouldn't it be antichrist to say he doesn't have a virtue?
Yep. Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't say disregard his virtue.
So
the what?
I guess what I'm getting at is that don't let the enemy lie to you that his virtue is Egypt. Uh-huh. Mm. The tabernacle in Christianity is Egypt. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Christianity will say that everything that's in this is Egypt. Mm. Or
bondage,
that it's old,
slavery.
It's bondage, it's slavery, and he set us free.
Yes.
Right.
But the enemy came in Genesis. Mm-hmm. All of this was to put it back in order.
Right. Yeah.
Then once again, we won't ever see it back in order until Yeshua comes to remind us you can do it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So it's like it's like the enemy to come in and completely twist the gospel to say that all of this is Egypt. Mm-hmm. When this is what frees you from Egypt.
Yeah.
Right.
Because he's a mediator after this template. And if you're called to be a mediator after this template, then we don't want to say, oh, we hate systems, so we never enter into a system. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Is that we wanted to be free to run wild.
Right.
He said you're leaving Egypt to basically leave a system to come into my system.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't say you're leaving Egypt to be free.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yep.
You are leaving Egypt to be free from Pharaoh, but you're leaving Egypt to be a slave to me.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
What we've done is said, I want to get rid of anything that says I'm a slave to anything, and I want to be my own God, and so I want to be free.
Yeah.
You're not free.
Yes.
You are a faithful covenant partner. Where you go, I'll go. Dang it.
Yes.
I'm not free.
Yes.
Right?
You die, I'll die.
Yep.
Yeah. You die, I'll die.
Yep.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Ride or die.
So. Oh, yeah. That was the priestly garments. Okay. I do want to read something at the end of the priestly garments, because he just said that it culminates. You have covenant, you have worship that leads to being a mediator into a system, right? And he said something really powerful, that the workmanship of the priestly garments was very beautiful. I'm going to get into that later, because it shows that he honors that the priestly garments represent Yeshua, right? His son is beautiful. So it's not common.
with what's going on here. We'll get into that. But I want to read the last verse. When Moses saw the entire work and that they had done it just as Adonai had commanded, Moses blessed them. So we end prior to his glory coming that Moshe blessed them. And so we see here that obedience. Now this is where it's going to, I hope that I'm going to twist your mind up and then I'm going to untwist it. Okay, that's what I intend to do. So what I'm going to say is that obedience leads to blessing. So that's just going to kind of twist you up and then I'll untwist it. But I feel like we've got to grab a hold of that. That obviously we see that all of this obedience does lead to a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All right. All right. Chapter 40. How are we doing?
Great.
Awesome. You guys okay to tackle all this in one day?
Yeah.
All right. Up until chapter 40, we have been in the building phase. I hope that this will make sense. But previously up to this point, we have been reading about the building. It's been the blueprint of the building.
Yeah.
They've been collecting and making the materials.
Yeah.
Okay. But now it's time to assemble. So I'm just going to read some definitions. So the word build is to construct by putting parts or materials together to make stronger or more intense. But remember, the other definition to build is the dimensions and proportions of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The build of your body.
Mm-hmm.
The make and model. The build of something. So up until this point, there's been a lot of blueprint. There's been a lot of instructions. And there's been a lot of building of individual materials. And I'm saying all of this because maybe this will just make sense in your life. It feels like there's kind of a scattering, or you're obedient to his instructions, but it's like the red goat hair is over here, and the silver shekels are being turned into bases over here, and the tapestry is over here, and you're just like, that there's a difference as we shift into the assembling. So the word assemble is to fit together the separate component parts.
Mm-hmm.
So now what's been separate is being fit together. The other aspect of assemble is to gather together in one place.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually assembling
something.
Does that make sense? When you look at build, the two different ways, building something, but also the build of something. And then you have assemble, assembling together, and then the assembling. Okay. So we've already kind of gone over this, but on the first day of the first month of Abib, which is also Nisan. So biblically, Hebraically, the month is Abib, but after Babylonian time, it changed to Nisan. So that's why you're going to see one of the two. But remember in Exodus 12:2, they left.
Right.
1 year prior to this. So he's basically alerting us that it has taken them 1 year to get to this point of actually building. Okay. So this is where the word inventory came. So what we up until this point, right before assembling, it's almost like we go through the end of 38 and he's taking inventory and he's counting out everything that's come in. So what I'm seeing in that is that it gives us an opportunity in this Torah portion, because remember, I'm doing next week's Torah portion. So we shift into tomorrow, that this next week is our time to really take inventory, take an evaluation of how you've grown over the last year. How have you moved? How have you listened? How have you obeyed? How have you fallen? Have you been corrected? How have you executed with him? Do we repeat our lives year after year? Or are we, or can we look back and see growth? This is that opportunity to stop, take inventory of what's come in, because he's asking you to build something, not just repeat the whole last year.
Yeah.
Never again do we see golden calves.
Yeah.
But we could if we don't shift into chapter 40.
Yeah.
So, so we'll just keep repeating the Exodus process. How many of us have left Egypt?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So take the opportunity to take inventory to be able to build something
to be able to move forward.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We see in chapter 40, the first thing that we see is that God is telling Moshe how to arrange things. So you've got the building, you've got the construction of individual things, and then you start to see that he is asking him to arrange it in a certain way. So again, details matter.
Yeah.
You know, not just build it, slop it together, but the arrangement of how to place it. So he tells him how to arrange the furniture in the holy place, arrange the items in the courtyard, and anoint Aaron and his sons. The actual, and then just so you guys know, the actual dedication of the ceremony is going to happen in Leviticus 8 and 9. So we don't see the full dedication ceremony, but this is where this happens in the Torah portion, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Then we see that Moshe is overseeing it as it comes to pass. So first Yahweh's basically telling him how to arrange all of these things, and then we see him overseeing the actual coming to pass of it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So the action of the assembly of the tabernacle, it basically just goes down the line. The tent of meeting, the ark and the veil, the table of showbread, the lampstand, the altar of incense, the screen at the entrance, the brazen altar, the laver, which I found interesting that they actually washed in when they plate. They actually washed their hands and feet. To me, that was him saying, I want your hands to be pure as you build this. Then he goes into the outer setup. So what we see here in chapter 40 is that Moshe finished the work, which is an earthly model of a heavenly reality. So this is where this is. Everything that I just talked about, to me, this is what is so powerful, is that there are realities. I've been saying this, that he did show me last year where we're going after Torah. You know how we have the three floors or the fourth floor, and it led us to Torah. He showed me what is coming after that. What is so powerful is that I believe that walking this path out is going to equip us to understand the reality. Like when Jason was saying, this is legit, this is real, that what is happening is we're learning that there are blueprints in heaven,
mm-hmm.
that he is asking us to walk out and make a reality on earth. And we've never been taught line by line how to do that.
Yep, yep.
We may have had a conference. We may have had a guest speaker that said that there, let me just going to give an example. We might go to a guest speaker and somebody might speak and say that in heaven there is a hospital and there is a room filled with body parts. And you're allowed to go into that room and grab that body part and receive healing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One service of hearing that's an idea does not train you as a priest to be able to activate what it looks like to actually take his blueprint and assemble it in the proper order and be able to make an earthly model of what we see in heaven. Those things are for us. But we have to be trained in his virtues to understand what heaven's blueprint is to be able to make it a reality.
Yeah.
But that is our promise. Mm-hmm. Our promise is to be a people so filled with his glory that we know how to build something that allows the earth to see heaven's blueprint, which is a reality on earth.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, going back to kind of what I said about the old and the old, the tabernacle is still a reality. Like, it's still in heaven. The temple, the tabernacle, however you want to say that, it's still a heaven, it's still a divine pattern, it's still a reality. So I'm just going to read a couple of these. Revelations 4, 1 through 6 talks about the throne, which is the Ark of the Covenant. Talks about the lampstand, the seven spirits, talks about the laver with the sea of glass. Revelations 8, 2 through 4 talks about the altar of incense. Isaiah 6, 1 through 7 talks about the temple and the brazen altar. Hebrews 9 is referencing Exodus this is what's so crazy. Hebrews chapter 9, all of the chapter is referencing all of Exodus to point to where the Messiah went. So it's not done away with because it's in heaven still. Because Hebrews 9 says that Messiah went there. Right? Hebrews 9, 23 through 24, at some point in time after his death, he entered the heavenly reality represented on earth. That's after all of Hebrews 9 talks about the entire temple. It's setting it up that that temple is what he entered into heaven. My point in saying that is if it's still a reality in heaven, and we are a people that are saying we want heaven on earth, kingdom now, what are we pulling down?
Yeah.
What did that mean when Paul said, you are the temple? You are the walking manifestation of heaven.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not done away with. Because it's still a reality in heaven.
Yeah.
Then he says, you are that reality.
Mm-hmm.
So if we say that that's been done away with, the enemy has come in to say you are no longer valid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The tabernacle is no longer needed. There's a better thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But the Messiah went to the tabernacle.
Mm-hmm.
In heaven.
Mm-hmm.
That I know I'm being super earthly when I say this, so please understand what I'm saying. That does me no good.
Mm-hmm.
It does eternal. It does it. You guys understand what I mean by that? It absolutely did everything for me for eternal salvation.
Yeah. Right.
Him going beyond the veil does me no good
right
now if I've made a death covenant that says one day I'll get it.
Yeah.
Right. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yes.
It doesn't do any good while I still have skin. It's a good concept.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know I'm talking really... You guys understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
It means everything.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're good.
It means everything. Okay, let me say it this way. It means everything for his part
mm-hmm.
in the relationship.
Yeah.
He's done everything on his part.
Yes.
But now if it needs to be manifested on earth, he said, it's your turn.
Yes.
So it does me no good to just say he did all that for me for nothing is what I mean by that. It meant everything, but it only means everything if I do something with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy. I don't know if I have eloquent words to explain what I'm saying, but what I want the impartation is that what is being dispensed to us is the keys to receiving everything that we've hoped for,
mm-hmm.
but haven't seen it and then just tried to have like a concept to make us feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, if we can, I've always said this, you cannot deal with anything if you don't feel it, right? If you don't feel it, then you can't acknowledge, you can't deal with it. So if I want to say that I am a new creation, then what I'm trying to get at is it's not a lofty term of I'm just a new creation. What does it really mean to walk through that hard truth that he stepped into the heavenly tabernacle for me to be a new creation to bring it on earth? Right?
Yeah.
Okay, let me just keep going with my notes and I'll see if it comes to me. Between Exodus 36 and 40, specifically in this last chapter, we hear it over and over and over and over again. As the Lord commanded Moses.
Mm-hmm.
As the Lord commanded Moses. 15 to 18 times in the last two chapters alone, it repeats over and over and over again. As the Lord commanded Moses.
So obedience is complete and exact. So I want to talk about obedience. Hebrews 8:5, and then and this is prefacing Hebrews 9, and I don't know why I'm going off on Hebrews, but in Hebrews 8:5, it's talking about all things are made according to the divine pattern. All that's saying is that everything that is on earth, everything that can be manifested on earth is a divine pattern of heavenly things. Mm-hmm. So if there's a divine pattern and there's a divine way, then our obedience is what produces it on earth.
Yeah.
The problem is that we tend to think we know better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We also think that we can improve on his divine instructions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So because we need to improve on his instructions and because we know better,
yep,
and we're not following his divine pattern, so we're actually not seeing the manifestation of on, we're not seeing the manifestation on earth.
Yep.
And
yes,
then we're so arrogant, we blame him for not coming quick
yep
enough.
Yep.
Yep.
Or we say he's not doing it.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Or we make up some theological things that
yep
say we just don't know why.
Yep.
Or it's just,
yep,
you know, we dumb the word down to match our experience when that's not
yes
what the word says.
Yes.
The word is putting the responsibility that if you are a new creation, then you're walking as a heavenly being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. But heavenly means holy.
Mm-hmm.
Heavenly doesn't mean crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or a feeler.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Heavenly doesn't
yep
mean I had an encounter. Heavenly means holy. He cannot live with people who are unholy.
Yeah.
So the obedience
yes
welcomes him to be able to be holy.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about obedience.
Okay.
I know we love this subject.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. We know, all of us should know, there's four things. Growing kids, we're just going way back. Growing kids God's way. There are four things. It's so powerful. I had no idea. It's actually really funny to me. Remind me that I'm talking about growing kids because I'm going to go off on a little path. We were notified today that there's no way. There's no way any of us would have gotten this by just going into the wilderness. There's no way you would get all this on your own. There's no
right
way. There's no way you would just have the word, go off in the wilderness, and all this would come about on your own. Who are you following? And I'm like, that's literally what happens. If all you have is the word in the wilderness,
right,
yes,
that you actually... Doesn't that sound like the renewed covenant where yes nobody's going to teach you?
Yes.
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 Sorry, I just don't understand. Well, what happens is when you lay it all out there and say, yes, Dad, or obedience,
yeah,
and you're following that, then yes,
mm-hmm,
you're just,
yeah,
anyway.
Right, yeah, right.
You follow his presence and then you find yourself. That's all you got to do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought that was like, that's just so funny. There's no way you can do this without...
Did you say
Yahweh? Well, it's just interesting because I'm like, but that's like the story, is that they were led
mm-hmm
out into the wilderness with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's literally where this all came from. So
yeah.
I just think that that's funny. All right, so obedience. First time.
Yes.
With a good heart.
Mm-hmm.
And to completion. Those are the three things. But the other added quality that we've talked about is that it needs to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
Not good, not better, but the best. So in obedience, there's four aspects. There is first time, there's a good heart, it's the best, and it's to completion. That's what I hear when it says, and they did all of these things according to the commandments that they
yeah
gave to Moses. So we're going to break that down a little bit. So number one, I want us to tackle purpose. I want to tackle purpose of obedience. This is super powerful, I think, to understand the purpose of obedience. You guys ready for this?
Yes.
Yes.
For his presence to dwell among the people. The purpose of your obedience is that the one leading you
yeah
can dwell with you.
Yeah.
Think about this. Kids, parents,
mm-hmm,
why do I want obedience?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we can be close.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I have a standard and I can't be close with separation.
Yeah.
The purpose of obedience
The purpose of obedience to my instructions is because it's my requirement of closeness.
Yeah. Yep.
That's good.
Right? The purpose for you to obey may not feel like it when it's a 29 shekels, or when it's sweep three times, or when it's clean the microwave every day. When it, you know, when it's those little things, it just seems like, why are you so mean? But the purpose of that is to set an environment and build something that allows us to have the fullness of connection.
Yep.
Because I'm, this is a weird example, but if I'm in the kitchen and the microwave is not holy, it's hard to dwell in an environment that's not the standard that
yes.
he requires.
Yes.
Is that making that making sense?
Yes.
It's a stupid example, but
no,
it's the, there's an environment that is is
yeah.
that is for me to be able to unlock you so that we can be more connected.
Yep.
Yes.
But if we have to focus on the things that aren't being built, then we can take all those 2,000 years worrying about the microwave.
Yep.
But the renewed covenant is you'll just want to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
And you will find joy in it.
You won't be taught by your brother.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys read Hebrews 8, 9? You'll just know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So then it's just connection.
Yeah.
Sometimes we spend all day having to collect the materials.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Versus when it's built, he just dwells.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay? So the purpose of obedience is for him to be able to dwell among the people. And that's the other thing that's hard. I don't know if this entered in anybody's mind. Well, what if I don't need that holiness for me to dwell? I don't care about the microwave. Well, it ain't your house. I'm asking you to build what I said in heaven. He saw something in heaven and gave it to Moses. He's asking you to build it, but that's what happens to us. I don't need the microwave to dwell.
Yes.
I could
yes.
do away without that one that one hook.
Yep.
I don't need one. I don't need a wall.
Yep.
Who? Why do we need four walls? Stupid. Right? We think we know better.
Yeah.
Yes.
We don't know why he needs four walls.
Yeah.
Just, yes, Dad. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And that doesn't mean that you guys are, I'm subject to that. Because there's requirements as parents of what we have to cultivate and build and do to be able to have connection anyway. So I'm not trying to like. All right. So purpose for obedience is his presence is to dwell among the people because he wants to move from the mountain. Okay, so all can experience him.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say this.
Yeah.
You want to experience the fullness of your parents, right? Or you want to experience the fullness of being unlocked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Being able to experience him. There is an aspect that I am required to build him a sanctuary so that I can experience him because I have to build something that's holy for him to be able to manifest.
Yeah. Yep.
Because he can't manifest in something dirty.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So God's presence begins with obedience of his people. Now, trying to think of how much I want to twist this up. I'll get into this a little bit more, but I'll say this now. That does not mean that he's looking. I want to put an emphasis on our role, but I also want us to understand that that doesn't mean that he's looking for perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because if he was, then he would say, I would only dwell with you in eternity.
Mm-hmm.
By the very purpose, this is what is so powerful. By the very fact that he trusts you to put your human, filthy little hands on his eternal plan
yes.
to say build me a sanctuary is actually supposed to be empowering of how amazing he thinks you are. He's not saying be perfect. He's saying be obedient. Or else he would say, you don't need a tabernacle. Just wander around. This is Christianity 101. Just wander around in the wilderness, having no idea what the hell's going on. And someday you're going to die, and then you'll experience my house. That would be perfection gospel. That would be you peons don't even deserve anything. You have to die for you to come into my presence. He's saying, I want to be with you right now. But in order to do that, I'm going to give you my template, and I'm going to empower you by the Ruach to be able to build what I need. And then we turn it on him and be like, how dare you need a clean microwave?
Yep.
I bought the microwave. It was the microwave I picked.
Yeah.
Is that mean?
Yes.
It's all mine. All you got to do.
Yes.
It's really free.
It is free, right? Because it's so easy to get locked into. So you're telling me I have to be obedient for your presence. And it's like I want to twist you up to kind of untwist you. I want us to understand our role, but I want us to understand it from the proper perspective. And I'm going to get into that in a little bit more. But this is not an eternity theology.
Mm-hmm.
By the pure nature that he wants to be on the earth means that this is not a perfection eternity issue.
Yes.
This is not a death covenant heaven issue. This is I'm teaching you how to bring me heaven onto earth.
Yes.
Okay? It's a spirit of obedience. He says you do.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
All right. Number two, you have to have a willing heart, which means it's sacrificial. You are all in and you want it.
Yeah.
Your companionship with him. Like you are all in and you want companionship. You desire, that is what you desire. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, at the end of the day, they were giving sacrificially $20 million. Because they were giving their all, because they believed the word, if we build, he's going to come.
Yeah.
There's a saying out there that I've heard. It's not in the word. If you build it, they will come. That ain't true. It's not in the word. That is an anti-Bible word, because the word is, if they will build.
Right.
He will come.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. So, giving sacrificially. So, the question that we have as we're tying up loose ends is, do we desire that companionship? So much so that you're willing to give sacrificially to build for him to dwell.
Yeah.
So, the evaluation of, and these are two things that have happened in all of our Exodus Torah portions, is does our schedule and our checkbook match our preparation?
Yeah.
Because our schedule and our checkbook is going to show you the value because of the commodity of time and wealth.
Yep.
The reason why I say that is because in the Torah portion, even though he asked them to build, he told them about Shabbat. He didn't say, you're building something really important, so Shabbat will happen in Leviticus. That didn't happen. Shabbat was still in place during this whole time, as well as the value of the commodity of what they were giving towards his presence. So those two commodities are getting hit on, whether it be the tithe and offering aspect through Exodus and the Sabbath. It's to give of our possessions, and to basically what I'm saying is in order for us to evaluate our desire of his companionship, is for us to be able to evaluate the value that we put on the preparation of what we're building for his manifestation, his manifested presence. A lot of us want his manifested presence, but we're not doing anything to prepare for his presence.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So when we're looking at this last month, is being able to evaluate under those two commodities, if we're giving of our possessions, meaning giving sacrificially, but then also submitting to his calendar.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that he asked them to do while they're building.
Mm-hmm.
So the building is not an excuse to not prepare for his presence. So he dwells among those who put him first. It does not mean
that those things are wrong. Time and money does not mean that those things are wrong. They're wrong when they're in wrong priority.
Yeah.
That they are to serve him or be subject to him, not the other way around. Mm-hmm. So that goes along with the category of willing hearts. So that would be the first one we talked about is basically first time obedience. He says you do, mm-hmm. right? That's the purpose of obedience. Second thing is willing hearts is having a good heart. The third thing to me is what he was talking about the best. Mm-hmm. That preparing a place for him is giving our best. Going back to the word that I had about purity. Everything that you give is going to be used for the dwelling. Nothing is going to be lost. Everything that you plundered from Egypt and everything that you back wages that were given to you from slavery is going to be given over to him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So everything that was your turmoil, everything that was your bondage, everything that held you back, all of that is going to be turned to such beauty. Mm-hmm. Everything that they received from that time was turned into something magnificent and beautiful, which to me is representation that there is nothing more beautiful to him than his son. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is why the priestly garments are so extravagant and the things that are building this is so beautiful. So that to me is representative of the best. We're not doing this good. We're not going to try to do it better, but we're doing our best.
Yeah.
And sometimes your best is what got plundered from your slavery, yeah. is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So we have to hear that from the mindset of where they were. They were in a desolate land, a hostile land. And what they had came from the season prior. Mm-hmm. And he turned it into something beautiful. Okay? All right, number four. To completion. This is where it could get a little sticky. So it's one thing to sacrifice, and it's another thing to prepare. Mm-hmm. Like that already is a lot, right? We just went over first time obedience with the best heart and sacrificially and beautiful. I mean, that's already a lot. It's one thing to do all of that for an experience.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us want an experience without doing any of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then if we do all that, we'll stop at experience.
Yep.
But completion is that it's another whole thing to commit why he's manifesting in the first place is not to give you an experience.
Yep.
But to let you follow him. Mhm. Cuz like what Megan said, it's just beginning.
Yep.
Mm. You guys are in the wilderness for 40 years. We're only in year one. So they didn't do all of this mm-hmm. to just have an experience on year one.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They did all of this because then to follow in completion is to then follow the experience mm-hmm. forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not have an experience and then go back to Egypt yeah. and then redo the year.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's one thing to commit. It's one thing to sacrifice. It's one thing to prepare for an experience. But then it's another thing to have to commit to following that experience wherever that experience leads.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's submitting to the will of God as he dwelt. Do we see beyond the experience or are we preparing for an experience? Mm-hmm. Do we understand that experience is actually going to lead you again?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. What is it unto? Literally. I mean, I know we say that a lot, like this is all unto something, but if you build something for his manifested presence to come, even that manifested presence mm-hmm. is to unto something.
Yeah.
So right. Let's just get fun.
Okay.
Old.
Yes.
old. Yeshua comes, gives you access. He gives you access and then, right, says, don't
right.
hold on to me.
Right.
I'm giving
right.
you something that's
right.
going to give you empowerment to be
right.
able to do something on earth.
Right.
So he's still old because we're still doing something on earth.
Yes.
He's still up there.
Yeah.
And then, you guys understand what
yes.
I mean?
Yes.
Okay, so now we're in the old. In order for him to come back for an experience?
No.
This should make this so much fun that we are just in transition, because when he comes back, it's not just to hear a trumpet and have a good experience and have one day every knee shall bow.
Yeah.
Unto what?
Yeah.
What happens when every knee bows?
Yeah.
What happens when he rules and reigns forever?
Yes.
And we're we're eternal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
It's just like in the, he didn't just fill his temple and be like, that was fun. Right? So when he comes, his glory fills the temple, is also unto forevermore.
Yeah.
With you.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I think he's gonna come back and it's just gonna be the Godhead. And then we're all just gonna like, I don't what do you guys think? I don't know what we think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Probably weird, whatever.
Well, maybe we haven't thought about it because we just think that we're just going to fly around in heaven forever.
Yeah.
But if there's things to rule and reign and he's taking, okay, let's just, how fun would this, let me just get you excited about a new gospel. What happens when you get to see the earth that you've been on without the devil?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This life, right now, no devil, no tears, no death, immortality, ruling and reigning nations when every knee will follow his divinity. And his divine plan is being made manifest, and he's co-partnering with you. I don't think we get excited about the hope of what's to come because we think, I don't even know. I'm like envisioning like ants. And he's just, no, not Disneyland. Like, you're going to be a king and a priest.
Bystander.
A nothing,
yeah.
a peon watching. You're not going to be on the sidelines watching what's going on.
Right.
You're going to be an active participant to something eternal, made manifest to everyone.
Yeah.
You're going to rule dimensions. You're going to rule universes. You're going to be in charge of things. So my point is, let's learn now to not prepare for an experience, but recognize that the experience is only unto another whole timeline.
Right.
To the extent that he dwells is the extent that we are guided.
Yeah.
So going back to the question, how do I trust to the extent that he dwells is to the extent that we are guided?
Yeah.
Because once his manifested presence comes on the tabernacle, he tells them where to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you don't feel like you're being guided, you've got to go back and prepare for his manifested presence.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay?
Good.
He was pleased. The people believed and loved him, which is why they were doing all of that. So here's where I kind of twisted you up when I said that his presence is based on your obedience. And I'm trying to break down the whole perfection, eternity mindset. But here's another way to say it. By their obedience, they didn't earn him. They welcomed him. We cannot see this from the mindset of a reward mentality. We cannot see this as an if-then, because that's not what this was about. It goes back to what I was saying about the purpose of dwelling in the first place. It's so easy to look at the instructions of, well, my mom only is present, or my mom only loves me if I. It's so easy for the enemy to come in when in reality, the purpose of those instructions in the first place is because I want connection.
Yeah. Right.
So it can't come from the perspective of a reward and consequence mentality, but understanding that you are creating an environment for him to be welcomed into.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't earn our rescue,
yeah,
nor are we loved more when we obey. So we don't earn our rescue, and I'm going to prove it to you. Because I know that that sounds like that doesn't make any sense because you just said his presence is based on my obedience. I'm going to explain. The reason why you would think that way is because you're stuck right here. You're stuck in your obedience. And you're also stuck that his presence hasn't come. So you look at it as a reward or a consequence mentality because you're only seeing from your one perspective about your obedience and his presence. So it is, so, okay, let me see if I can do this. His presence is based on your obedience. But if you stay only in the mindset that all I have to do is obey, then you're going to look at it as like it's a reward mentality. What I want us to understand is he offered a way to be rescued without any obedience beforehand. Your obedience will determine his presence. You don't have obedience without his presence. So if you are the source, then you're going to think my obedience is going to bring about his presence. And it is, but only from the perspective that he gave you a way to be obedient in the first place.
Yeah.
Because he chose to rescue you and give you the instructions without you being obedient.
Yes.
Yep. So that's what it means by he loved you first.
Yes.
Yep. That doesn't mean that when he says, I require you to love me back for me to abide with you, doesn't mean you can stay here and be like, well, I loved you first and that's why you came. Yes, because you loved me and responded to that, I can come, but I loved you first to be able to love me in the first place. Don't forget that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you cannot earn his presence. You welcome his presence by being obedient that he gave you a way to be able to bring his presence in the first place by giving you instructions to be obedient to.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't yours in the first place. You're just being obedient to what he already said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He is the finisher and the author of it all.
Right.
You're not the author.
Yep.
So when I put the emphasis on you being a co-laborer and you have a responsibility, I am coming from the mindset that he gave you the responsibility in the first place.
Yes.
I'm not saying you're the source. I'm saying the Ruach's the source. But you have a source.
Yeah.
And you have a part to play. And your part to play does manifest something, but it doesn't come from you. So it's not a reward mentality.
Yeah.
But it is a requirement.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good, Mom.
But it's so easy to get stuck if you just stay at here and not see that he's the one that gave you a way to that in the first place.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You don't have anything to be obedient to.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know obedience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't know what to do. You have you have nothing. You don't know how to be right, wrong. You don't know how to be life, death. You don't know anything without him who first chose you.
Yes.
Who first chose to rescue you without you doing anything.
Yes.
Not to mention thinking, well, let me get to that. Does that make sense to what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Okay. I want us to understand that twist and then the untwist, that it absolutely matters. Your obedience does produce something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not about you being perfect or you being the source for him to come, because you're only walking out what he did for you in the first place.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with this line here.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Same thing with right here. A lot of people will say, well, if you want to say that this is an old thing, then you're just going back to that you're the one doing it. No, I'm saying that he's the source that taught me how to do it, but I'm just saying I have a role to do it.
Yes.
But I'm not going to put this false, I loved how you said like that false humility. It's all God.
Yes.
I actually don't like that anymore when I hear people be like, it's all God. Stop. So you just stood there and you'd Like, but that doesn't make any sense. It's all God.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna be super crazy right now. This is not all God.
Yeah.
I have to participate.
Yeah.
I have to invest. Yes. I have to lean in. I have to, but I will say, this is not from me.
Yes.
None of this is from me. Mm-hmm. Does it, but at the same time, I'm not going to be like, if you guys were like, you did a great job, China. It's all God. No, it's not. I am an equal partner in having to deliver, but at the same time, that's why you break false humility. At the same time, I'm not saying it's all me.
Yeah.
It came. He's the.
Yes.
So
yeah.
You have to do that with things that you do well, and you have to do it with things that you don't do well.
Yep.
Okay. So when we walk in His ways, it welcomes Him to be able to fill and abide. Dwell in and among us, and we are blessed. Proverbs 3:5-6. He directs our paths. So to the extent that we're obedient is to the extent that He directs our paths. The last thing that I wanted to talk about with Exodus 40 has a lot to do with the beauty of it. But I wanted us to understand that this was not common. Because if you noticed, Moshe did everything. Moshe was doing everything, and then when the glory came, he couldn't go in. What I got from that was that this happened to Moshe and it happened to Solomon. That the same exact thing happened, that when the glory came, he was not able to go in. What I'm seeing from that is that without the glory, it's just a tent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I'm going to untwist some things again.
Okay.
Moshe prayed in Exodus 33. Remember when he was like, we cannot do this without you.
Yeah.
Yahweh answers him, Exodus 40. And Moshe can't go in.
Mm-hmm.
So I want us to think about that. How I'm seeing it is his prayers are answered, and he's not able to go in. And what I'm seeing from that is that it's not common. Without his glory, without Yahweh's glory, without the Shekinah, without the manifested presence, it would just be a tent.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an aspect of honoring his presence that by the very nature of not being able to touch something, is actually means it's not common.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's...
Yes.
It's kind of like last week, we were talking in a circle last week, and I was saying how by the nature of being in the wilderness
mm-hmm.
and realizing that you suck, it actually means you're free.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're a robot in Egypt, so you can't think for yourself.
Yeah.
So sometimes it sucks when you become free because you think for yourself and you're like, oh, wow, this is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like, that's good news. That is a good thing. It means you're free.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the same thing. When his presence comes and you can't go in, it's almost like it's the recognition this is not common.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Without his presence, it's just a normal tent.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it's showing in Exodus 29:45, the whole purpose of all of this Exodus is they will know that I am Adonai their God who brought them forth out of the land of Egypt so that I may live among them. I am Adonai their God. So he's basically saying all of this is so that people will know that I am their God.
Yeah.
And that is what happens in Exodus 40. It's a fulfillment of that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not common.
Yeah.
It can't be common if the nations are to know that he's their God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was an aspect there that I thought was freeing where we don't want it to be common.
Right.
Or familiar. Like there was an aspect of Moshe it not becoming familiar anymore because it was a new system in play.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's great hope and trust because in the desolate, hostile land, so think about this, in slavery, they are thinking about the obedience part. They're in a desolate land. It means hostility. They're with their enemies. They're weak. They're liable to sin. And they were rebellious.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, he was with them.
Mm-hmm.
right? So the journey that we're watching, that we're reading through all of this is he who began a work will complete it.
Yeah.
Destination is always a part of a journey.
Mm-hmm.
The destination that you're going to is always a part of the journey. But the journey itself prepares us for the destination.
Yeah.
So there's a destination that's coming.
Yep.
But it's the journey itself that prepares us for the destination.
Yep.
And I want to encourage us that when I'm talking about obedience is me wanting to equip and like sledgehammer or punch the enemy in the face to say you have no role, but
yeah.
also do not want to make it sound like it's all up to you because you could not do it without,
right.
you have nothing to be obedient to without his instructions in the first place.
Right.
So you have a destination. There's a destination that we're going to, but the journey that we're on is what's preparing us for that destination.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
good.
We'll have to like, I don't even know if we need a podcast. You guys will just have to like decipher my words.
Oh, it was good.
There's really no way to wrap that up, but I do feel, I just feel the anointing of the shift and that word of taking an inventory. It's amazing how Yahweh lined up this next few weeks that we essentially did next week's Torah portion now.
Yeah.
So that we're equipped to take an inventory during that divine time as we turn this corner with this shift that everybody talked about in the beginning. And I just feel like there's a tremendous anointing on what was released to position us to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And it's super powerful. And I think I have a just kind of a word to seal that impartation that I'll give when we do communion. But yeah, it's there's just a tremendous weight on everything that was released. And I think it's one of those things where you dig into it, but you also have to be postured to receive it by the Spirit to gain the fullness of it. So, Amber, come up unless you got something else.
I just want us to be, you know, when he was talking the other day or a couple weeks ago, like be excited.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Amazed.
I think it's like, yeah, be amazed. I think it's understanding. By putting everything on the table, he's reigniting what's to come.
Yeah.
To be able to pull that forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just seems like it's a new I don't know what's going on. It just feels like there is an understanding. Mm-hmm. It's circular. So the more we understand this, the more we understand our past, the more we understand our future.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we know Heaven's blueprint, the more we understand the future, then actually as a new creation, we'll have the ability to be able to pull that and begin to activate that now. Because I don't want to make it sound like we're just waiting.
Yeah.
I hope that didn't come across. Like, even though it's not happening yet, I believe what I'm trying to do is light a fire, fan the flame.
Yes.
That whatever it is that he's doing,
mm-hmm.
is causing the remnant to pull that forward.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
I don't know. It's like I don't know. It's like I don't know if this is going to be accurate to say, but when I'm reading about the renewed covenant and it hits me that we're not in it yet, but some of us are. It almost like gives understanding of what our role is going to be as priests,
mm-hmm.
and what it is that he's equipping us for to be able to pull something forward.
Yeah.
It's almost like a greater level of ownership.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about a remnant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like bringing understanding to what do you do? Behold, days are coming when I will inaugurate a new covenant. And like some of you feel, okay, all right, let's just go there. I will put my Torah into their mind and upon their hearts. What do we do when some of us get that and some of us don't? It's empowering to see it from this perspective, because then there's more ownership of what a priest is, to be a mediator, to dispense his virtue, to release this covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Because if this hasn't happened yet, then what role do you have if it has happened for you?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you have awakened to the Torah being written on your heart,
right,
then you are in the new covenant, literally a new creation, and why he came.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Walking as a heavenly being.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some that believe that they are all those things without the renewed covenant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's like a weight
mm-hmm.
of the government on your shoulders.
Yeah.
But also a tenacity and an excitement to be obedient.
Yeah.
For his manifested glory, so you can be led. I don't know what I'm trying to say. There's no line.
Yes.
There's no more old and new. It's just all old until.
Yes.
And
yes.
You are not new until the renewed covenant happens. So if it's happening for you, now you're the priest.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So it's not all done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
No.
I don't.
No, it's really good. I feel like you guys like turned that Torah portion into a chapter book.
You could dive into that for years, just that Torah portion. Obviously, things that were. Do you want to go with this?
No.
We'll jump in when you're ready.
It's just wrecking me about closing, close to banishing. In Hebrews 9. In saying new, he has treated the first as old. But what is being made old and aging is close to vanishing. That's not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a hope, right? Because if we thought that that's all been vanished, then we're just floundering around trying to figure out why some of us are crazy and some of us aren't.
Yeah.
Instead, it's like the old. You guys, it's close to vanishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. No, it's all been really good. I think that Mom basically taught on tithes, offerings, first fruits.
Yes.
Like all encompassing, and so I don't know that I have a whole lot to add. I just I think it's obviously just worth repeating that we have a role in that obedience.
Yeah.
And just the, like, my head is still trying to wrap around like the perfection side. Like my perfectionist brain is like but I'm hearing you, I'm getting it, and I can tell like that there is such an untwisting and an unlocking that's happening in just what is being released in tonight. And so wanting to be intentional that when Mom is saying take an inventory, like I can see that in every like piece of what she highlighted tonight. Take an inventory of all the things that were released, like going through again, like the our checkbook and our schedules. Like are we being intentional to look at like every minute of the day? If he is detailed to the shekel, to the like the nth degree, are we intentional with like every second that we have? Are we intentional with every hour? Are we intentional with every day? Can we like just start somewhere so that we can take inventory to figure out where we are in our intentionality with those things?
Yeah.
The other thing was that when she was talking about the integrity that they carried, that every shekel was used, I think it's honoring to know that that is a foundation that's been established in this home.
Yeah.
That every penny is accounted for,
yeah.
is tracked, is like is able to be meticulously found, sought out, utilized. Like there's not an ounce of what comes in that is not trackable. And that is because of a foundation that said we will honor what Yahweh has given us, and we will
yeah.
set things in order, and
yes.
we will be obedient, and we will get things in alignment so that every ounce of what comes in is trackable.
Mm-hmm.
So then it just continues to speak to the value that the foundation has set of the companionship that we will carry with him. And so knowing that our role is to take inventory of things like our schedules and our checkbooks, can we mirror the foundation that's been set?
Yeah.
Can we mirror the example of what's been done so that we can continue to be an example of that tabernacle, and we're not missing a post, or we're not missing a base somewhere because we just forgot to track it?
Yeah.
So while we're doing that, I want us to be thinking about what that looks like and what we're afforded in this house, to be able to have like those literal examples of those things being walked out on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have first fruits,
mm-hmm.
and Mom also released on that. So I'll start to pass this around. But with your first fruits, I was just seeing like a practical engagement that as you put your first fruits in. And we'll be going to do communion, so if you want to activate this as we go to do communion, that's fine too. But just wanting to highlight again that the end of something is the beginning.
Yeah.
And as he's tying up those loose ends and bringing things... oh, my heart wants to cry for you. as he's tying up those loose ends and bringing things to completion, I want us to practically do a turn to where we're when she was talking about the complete turnaround, I want us to engage that complete turnaround where we're stepping into joy, we're switching out that depression, those anxiety things, the things that were coming up, and we're shifting into and we're spinning and turning into a complete turnaround of what we're activating in this month. So as you guys engage in that, I would encourage you to find something, whether it's a penny or whatever, because like she's saying, whether it's their story, but it's our story.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's things that Yahweh's asking us to walk out that we get to engage. And so no matter the amount, I want us to be intentional to find something to trade into that first fruit, knowing that it's tangible, it's real, it's here, and it's something we can tangibly see, love, hug, bless. And so if we can find something to just attach ourselves to that and physically make that movement. And then whenever we're ready, we can head over to communion.
You mean like literally put it in the bucket and then like stand up and like do a 360?
Yeah.
Like literally turn around.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say something real quick? I mean, I've been spewing over here this whole time. I mean, what I think is good is without being emotional, and it kind of has to do with what you're saying. I've been trying to figure out first fruits for us for a long time and what it meant and the sacrifice and that kind of stuff. And if my numbers, granted, I understand Google isn't the greatest of accuracy, but I'm going to take Remy this week because this little strip of paper that I just figured out what the sacrifice each Israelite made just to build the tabernacle is. And if I can just go through this, it's, I don't know, has anybody ever figured out how much money and silver and gold and everything has been there and what it translates to today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, 100 talents of silver was 35,300 pounds. 29 talents of gold was 2,193 pounds. and a talent of bronze was 4,800 pounds. That translates out to, the gold was 54,600,000 dollars. Bronze was 10,200. Silver was 1,121,800. And you put it all together, it's $55,731,834. And if you break that down even more, just to the 603,000 people that were over the age of 200, that's $92 each, okay? But you break down $92, or I even broke it down further than that, there was my math could be wrong, but there's 2.5 million Israelites, or 3 million Israelites wandering around. And that, if you broke down to what each person gave that was out there, it was $18.50 a person. That broke down for me to each person gave 300 denarii, basically. It's 1 year's wage. But if you break that 850 down to 1 year's wage, there was 1 year's wage of 300 denarii was $7.25. So each person gave over 2.5 years of wage towards the tabernacle. And that's every single person. Mm-hmm. And if you just did the 603, that's $92 out of each one of those people. And that's almost what, 4.5 years' wage? Mm-hmm. And to think about first fruits and the sacrifice that they made compared to what you're making in first fruits, how do you measure up? Mm-hmm. How do you make that sacrifice? Mm-hmm. You know, I know first fruits is a little different, but it's still a sacrifice. You know, carrying Remy's a sacrifice. I mean, this is a huge eye-opening for me. I know it may not be an eye-opening to everybody in here, but I just took it for granted. Took first fruits for granted. I took tithing for granted. So I don't want to take that for granted, so I'm taking them in this. I didn't mean to take away from you, Amber. I'm blown away. I don't know why it's so baffling to me that many people can give. I can't give 2.5 years of wage. Granted, I don't have to build a tabernacle, but I don't know. It's crazy. Thank you. Sorry.
That was awesome. Yeah, I think I had it valued at $20 million, so you just upped it to $55 million. But what I think is so powerful is the supernatural, where we are in the timeline, is that level of sacrifice was not a command.
Yes.
You need to do this. Mm-hmm. It came out of an overflow of a heart of understanding. I'll give it all if it means he'll dwell with me.
Yes.
If I because at the end of the day, anybody, any one of them could have said, I'm entitled to those 4.5 years of wages.
Yes.
I was in slavery. Mm-hmm. My family was in slavery. Mm-hmm. The generations were in slavery for 400 years. Those are back wages. I'm owed that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they took the back wages of their heartache and the years of suffering.
Yes.
It wasn't even like it was an abundant overflow. It came from a place of suffering and said, you did this for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll give, right? Like if anybody was entitled, it would have been them to be like, I worked for that.
Yes.
I was treated unfairly.
Yeah.
And they shifted their plunder. Away from them, that was owed to them, they shifted it and gave it all to him.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to have companionship, in order to build something that he could dwell with, it's amazing. Because you think about it, even $20 million or $55 million,
how did they have all that stuff in the middle of the wilderness?
Right.
You know, and then and it was their trinkets to remember that they were free. Mm-hmm. So they even took what was the reminder of them of freedom and said, let's create something together that would be beautiful, that would create a new system that says he's king. It's super powerful. You can come get him.
Appreciate you sharing that, Dwayne.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Since Dwayne's grabbing Remy, we'll head over and we'll do communion and release this word to seal.
You guys can all kind of.
Yeah, once you grab your stuff, don't spread back out. Come in here because I want to speak this word. All right. Looks like everybody's got their stuff. Like, fill this in right here. So I don't necessarily have the words to articulate. I'm going to try the best I can, but I feel like there's so much significance to first fruits, the message tonight, our time tonight, taking communion, the level of alignment that we're going to step into right now, or that we have the opportunity to step into right now. It makes me think to remind us of expansion. For me, myself, this word of impartation that Yahweh has for us tonight makes so much sense, because what I'm feeling and what I want to say, when she's talking about being built, there's an aspect of constructing things, but then there's the aspect of dimensions and proportions of a thing, the build of something. And that's what I really feel stirred about, is that, and I know from talking to many of the family over the course of the recent months or year or whatever, that for many of us, there's something that's been being built in a high place that he's going to reveal to us as we turn this corner. I know for me, an expansion in the process, that when I just think about the process I've gone through and how important it is to reflect on growth, failure, good, bad, indifferent, that there was a directive released and to encourage us to just be obedient no matter what the outcome is, to evaluate our, you know, growth, our failures, whatever process we've been in, to evaluate that over this next week in consideration of the Torah portion, because what's happening is he's going to give you a revelation of, the way he showed me was, each individual, there's something, there's a build that you have that you've never seen that he's going to reveal to you in this next week. That's the way he said it to me, whether that's something outside of yourself, whether that's your spiritual stature, whatever, he's going to reveal who you were built as. He's going to reveal your dimensions and proportions in truth in this next week, if you will genuinely just be obedient to evaluate and be obedient to that process that she directed us to in this next week. So in expansion, it gets me excited personally, just as a testimony, because I can see the process I've been through. I know the successes, I know the failures. And he was literally just talking to me in the last couple of days, not even something that I've talked to mom yet, because I'm still processing it. But this word makes sense, because now I know when I take communion and I engage in this process next week, he's going to reveal the dimensions of what's been built in a place that I haven't seen yet. He's going to reveal it to me. Wow. And that's the fruit of the expansion process that we've all been walking out. All of us are being expanded in some way, shape, or form. And whatever's been being built in that pursuit of expansion is going to be revealed in this process of going through this evaluation next week. So I want you guys to really think of whatever that is, whatever that desire is, whether it's something in your physical body, whether it's turning, I mean, I just look around the room and I think of like jobs or expansion in business or turning a corner into a new phase of life or desires for a covenant partner, right? Like anything, everything Dwayne just talked about, anything that we have been desiring in our process of walking these Torah portions out for the last 73 weeks, now is the time in this next week as you're obedient to evaluate and consider everything that something is going to be revealed that's been built in a heavenly place. Mm-hmm. Your covenant has been built in a heavenly place and it's going to be revealed to you next week. Mm-hmm. Like as real as that is, it's going to be that real for each and every one of us if we truly desire that and we just be obedient to the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want you guys to just take a moment to yourself and consider what is that? Because I believe he'll answer you, and I believe it's something that's been stirred in your heart in, as a desire or whatever, a pursuit. Ask him what that is, and then commune with him over that. And then that will seal us and send us into that process of evaluation this week. Amen.
I just want to add one thing. I want to encourage you that if it's not something that's external, it could be internal. The build of who you are. Mm-hmm. So this month is a transformation from depression to joy, anxiety to peace. Mm-hmm. So the things, what is the build of who you mm-hmm. are in that heavenly place will be made manifest so that it can be assembled properly. Mm-hmm. So the dimensions and the proportions of what's being revealed to you may be a transformation in your DNA. It could be bloodline transfers. It could be, I don't know, I just saw that.
It could be a relationship. Mm-hmm. What is the build and dimension of a relationship that's been broken that he's actually going to show you what it's supposed to look like? Mm-hmm.
And again, it's so that it can be assembled.
Mm-hmm.
So that it can lead, right? It just keeps going.
Amen. So just think on that as you take communion. You guys can take more time as you need. Obviously, we have our you know, normal, we have about an hour. Take the time you need to engage that. And I would encourage you guys to just share that with one another, like whatever that thing is that he's going to reveal to you or you're believing for, share that with somebody in the family. Amen.
Amen. Well, I certainly don't want to interrupt anybody's time, and especially that extra permission that's been given to take that or activate that right now. So I'm just gonna release a closing over us as we move into that and as we move into the rest of our night, and then just a couple quick announcements. Okay. Okay. So I don't know what more really needs to be said, so I'm gonna be kind of short in what I add, but I just feel like honoring Yahweh with the full recognition of the heart of a father who simply wants to dwell again, and that all of the work, all of the preparation, all of the assembling, everything that's been talked about comes from the heart of a hungry father who just wants to be able to dwell again, who wants to reside in a place not separated or far off, because he is who he is and he doesn't have to be close. Right? He could stay in a place. He could stay in a heavenly place. He could stay in a heavenly realm. But to desire for him to be so hungry to reside with people on earth because of the way that he loves you is the only motivation or hunger that we need to endure the work that he's called us to. Right? Is there anything else? That's that word about it coming from the overflow of a heart. That does it not make your heart overflow and your spirit so very willing?
Mm-hmm.
That it would be so softened in response to Yahweh who wants to simply dwell. And so
everything that's been said about turning that corner and this being a beginning, that that is the foundation of your beginning, that that Exodus story, that work that was done to deliver his people was so that you could begin assembling now. Literally, we are in that place that we could begin assembling his dwelling place so that we can call him home out of that desire of his heart, and that our hearts would be so, so overwhelmed by that, that there would be nothing that, that we wouldn't endure on behalf of and unto, just as Mom was saying, right? That unto that we always talk about, but there's so much clarity in what that is, right? And even activating the word of endurance that's been spoken over us, that it's not this challenge to endure a thing or to endure a life's work of preparing a place, but that it's in response to a father's heart who just wants to dwell. So, so we will move into the rest of our evening. First couple announcements. Tonight or tomorrow night is bait. And I feel like when we have nights like tonight, it makes me even more hungry and excited for the opportunities that we have to be discipled or to sharpen one another, because it's all, it becomes, everything becomes more clear, right? Like the work of a couple hours of discipleship, so that we can continue to be equipped to prepare a place. Okay,
yeah.
I want to do that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I want to do that. So, tomorrow night, bait, our normal time, 6 o'clock here. Okay? And so we'll meet down here. And then I just want to send out a quick reminder. I'm sure we are all carrying so much on its behalf at this point, after everything that was released tonight in the spirit, when it comes to why we won't be having service next Friday. So I don't know that I really need to add anything, just a reminder that not only do we not have a service on Friday, but you have the week to take inventory and to prepare for the actual indwelling of his, the glory that is coming, and the glory that's going to come over this house next week as those first fruits step into the original intent for covenant. And we all get to play a role or have the honor of carrying an aspect of that because of what's being restored, and the representation that that is. I mean, it's a literal, there is a literal transaction that's taking place. And it is a literal transaction between Anya and Jalen, and it is a literal transaction for this house and for his remnant bride.
Yeah.
So we will be preparing all next week for all of the different ways that we get to step into his intentions next Saturday.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.